A listener production.
Okay, are you recording? Are you recording?
Howdy team, you are listening to episode 9 of the Howie Games Artist Series Part A, featuring one of the coolest cats getting around, singer, songwriter, Pete Murray. Now, Pete's story, it's not your typical musician's tale. Pete did not pick up a guitar for the first time until his early 20s. What about that? Gives hope to us all. Since then, he has been a star of the Aussie music scene, a string of massive hits from So Beautiful to Better Days, Always a Winner, An Opportunity. Three of his albums have gone to number one in Australia. His latest song, you need to check it out. It's called Hold Me Steady. Hold Me Steady. It is a cracker. It's a really upbeat, positive tune. It's off his EP The Night. As Molly Meldrum would say, do yourself a favour. Now, before Pete picked up a guitar for the first time, he wanted to be an athlete. Rugby, athletics, those were Pete's dreams, which makes him spot on for the artist series. Check this out. Pete Murray plays the guitar, sings, drives a combi and surfs. Just about the ultimate life, I reckon. Come on, who would not want to be able to tick all those boxes? A cast iron guarantee from me to you. If you don't already love Pete Murray before listening to this episode, I reckon you will by the end. Enjoy the story of a man who figured out what he wanted out of life and has set about achieving just that. Pete Murray. Welcome to the Howie Games Artist Series, a man that has dominated the Australian music charts for the last 15 years. He's got new music out, new music coming, and he is a man that's played a lot of sport in his time as well. So he's perfect for this show. Pete Murray, welcome to the Howie Games Artist Series. How are you, mate?
I'm good, Howie. Yeah, how are you, mate? Good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. You're in Byron. I immediately asked you for a surf check, but you've still got a crook elbow from SAS.
I do. I do. You know what? I'm going to show you the x-ray that didn't get... seen on the show, so that you can have a look at this.
So it was you and Mark Philippoussis, a man that's been on this show, in the House of Stoush. You were going toe-to-toe. Pete. Oh, no.
So it's supposed to look like that.
It doesn't look anything like that,
no.
Does it?
So, yeah, it just was an awkward fall, and that's what happened. So it popped right out. And,
so what happened? My family, massive fans, my two young ones, 9 and 11, they love it.
Yep.
And I was at work and they said, oh, Pete, the singer guy, he got in a blue with Mark Philippoussis, because they know him because he's been on the show, and then he had to leave. So what happened?
Look, you know what? We just went for it. It was, we're both not aren't boxers, you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
No. But I thought what the show wants us to do is just go for it. And so I just kind of went for Mark, and he sort of came at me, and we had a great tussle, and it was they cut a lot of things out. We had a good punch up the first round, and we really got stuck into it, and we both kind of got tangled up and fell. It's basically the DS are like, this is not about boxing. This is just, it's called milling. So they want to see you just get in there and go for it. Have no fear. Show aggression. And also at the same time, you get to see how that you handle getting hit.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of boxing before, you know, gym stuff, nothing too serious, but enough to know that, you know, like the gloves are quite soft. It wasn't hurting to get hit at all. But so the first round we had with Mark was pretty tight and pretty full on. And the second round, I noticed how tall he is and how long his reach is.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's just got this extra, probably this much longer than me on the arms. And I was struggling to get in close to him. I got a few shots on him. But sort of towards the end there, he got a couple of men. I stumbled back. And only that I watched the show just recently that I realised there's a little bit of a, he sort of hit me in the elbow and gave me a little bit of a shove too, the dirty bugger.
That sounds like Scud.
In the middle of a savage fight, number 5, Pete Murray, has fallen hard.
Elbow joint.
And dislocated his elbow.
What's happened is you popped this left elbow out of joint, okay?
Yep.
So, mate.
Can you get it back in?
No. You're going to need to go up to hospital. You're going to need x-rays. Yeah. Do you reckon you can walk with me?
Yep, let's go.
Yeah, and I fell, it wasn't his fault. I fell back and I just, I probably should have just fallen back on my back, but I sort of twisted and put my left arm back to brace my fall, and next minute this just popped out, and, yeah, nothing I could really do.
Given the seriousness of his injury, Pete Murray has no option but to be medically withdrawn from the course.
Oh.
We don't know if there's broken bones in there, so you need x-rays.
Okay.
So we need to get you to hospital, and they'll need to put that back in, but we want those x-rays
first.
Can we get to
hospital? Just drive there?
Yeah.
We'll... Can't get the chopper mate to come in? No. Joking, mate.
Hey, you're not that important, mate. Yeah, you might be a rock star, but we're not going to call a bloody chopper for
what's
you.
What's going on? Sure.
You obviously look shattered. Like, were you enjoying the show? I've had a couple of friends that have been on it and a couple that have just filmed it recently, and they, you know, I remember Heath Shaw coming on the radio during the AFL broadcast, yep. And he said, hey boys, this is not messing around, this is harder than any preseason I've ever done, and this is a veteran AFL footballer, so yep. Were you enjoying the challenge of it? We'll get to your sporting life. You've gone pretty hard in a couple of different sports. Were you enjoying the challenge of it, mate?
I loved that sort of thing, you know, for me it was super exciting because you didn't know what was coming up next. And that's the thing. It was scary. It was as scary as it was exciting for me. You know, we did things that you would never do. I think probably the first day we got gassed, you know, to do that and just go in a room where you just can't breathe. Your eyes are stinging. Your lungs are stinging. There's just no oxygen there. And it's they're trying to talk to you. They're trying to make me sing. The afternoon we go out and we're in a helicopter, you know, going across a ladder. To get back in the other side, you're probably 30 metres above the water. It's a long way.
Yes.
So you've got to really focus on it is a mental thing as well as physical, but you really have to take all the fear out of things and not focus on that. So, for example, the helicopter, you're so far up, I didn't look down at all. You're just focusing where you have to go. It was great. I think that's really challenging when you're doing that. The other thing for me that was a really bit of a concern at first was the you know, getting... in the Jeep, putting a seatbelt on, being lowered down under the water.
Yes.
He's about to be fully submerged as part of a simulated drowning drill.
Hold your breath, wait for the breeze on the shoulder. Easy.
She needs to remain seated for 40 seconds without losing her nerve.
Even though, and I surf, so I was kind of comfortable about it, but at the same time I'm going... What happens if this seatbelt doesn't come off? I checked about three times before I went under. And, you know, what if your boots get caught on something, your laces? So all these things you've got to think about because you've got to swim out between the seats and out the back window. Mm. And as I was going under, I remember taking a couple of short breaths just to sort of get air into my lungs, and I kind of mistimed it. So I went under the water. I was like, oh, geez. I totally missed my breath, you know, so... But I was really relaxed, you know, because of the surfing. I think I can sort of stand in the water for a while. And I was just really calm under there and got through. But that was, you know, things like that that you don't normally do in normal life that challenges you is the really, that's the exciting thing. When I finished, you know, that, for example, I just been being really pumped up afterwards going, that was amazing, you know. So what's the next thing? The next challenge is everything was kind of always something you've never done before and scary. But for me, super exciting and to know, you know, how you would handle the situation, because when you're watching some of the other guys, it's harder if you're sort of towards the end because you're watching everyone and a lot of people fail these things, you know, there's some of the early tasks in those first 4 days because I was only on there for 4 days and that seemed to be the tasks that were kind of all the fairly scary things, you know.
So so it's your left elbow, yeah?
Yeah.
So how does that go? That's obviously your, you know, where you're moving along the fretboard on your guitar.
Yeah. That's it.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine now, yeah. I mean, like, I can't, it's about probably 95% that I can straighten it. I can't fully straighten it yet, but I'll just get there. It requires a lot of physio and, you know, a lot of strength work to get it back to where it was. But, yeah, like I said, you know, I felt bad on the show because when it happened, all I wanted to do was get to Mark and go, look, mate, that wasn't your fault.
Mm.
That was just, you know, it was my mistake. And I think he felt pretty bad about it for a while. So especially at the end of the show when we caught up, he was like, I might have felt so bad for such a long time because we didn't talk. You know, I was just taken straight off and that was it, off to the hospital.
He's a sensitive soul too. Hey, mate, we talk about so much sport, but a little bit of music at the start. Your EP, The Night, congratulations on your new music. And I've been listening. It's been going around in my head. And immediately when I listened to Hold Me Steady, I thought, now there is a positive song. Like the way it starts, love, hope, will you please stay, hurt, pain, you take it away. I don't think there's been more relevant words to what's been going on. You know, it's been difficult in New South Wales, obviously your environment. Yeah. It's been a killer down here in Melbourne.
Love, hope, will you please stay, hurt, pain, take it away.
Congratulations, because a real positive vibe, and by gee, we need a bit of positivity at the moment.
Absolutely. I think that, well, you know, the timing for that song was just seemed to be right. Lyrically, everyone was really, you know, buzzing on it. It's getting more rotation on the radio now, so it's good. I think you're going back to the lyrics. For me too, when it's probably my favourite song at the moment of mine that I'm playing, right, because it is such a nice song to sing. It's very positive. The chorus is a massive, massive chorus to sing along to. So it's really enjoyable to sing, not only because of the phrasing and of the song, but the lyrical content of it as well. So it is, it's just positive, mate. It's very nice to do. I can't wait to do it live, to be honest. You say,
poke around your own house. I'm fascinated with musicians, and put some of your own tunes on. Do you go back to some of the old gear and wander around your house and listen to your music or not?
Never.
Don't you?
No. I don't know anyone that does that, but if you do, that's embarrassing. No, the only time, I think you get so sick of your own songs too, because, you know, when I'm in the process of doing a new EP now, so
yes,
listening to mixes and you know, the mastering's been done. So I'm on the headphones the whole time. You're just playing it over and over and over. You're making little notes of what's not working. You're going back and making changes. So you listen to the song so many times before it comes out. By the time it comes out, I don't want to hear it again, you know. Right. It's different playing it live, but when you listen to the song you've recorded and you've listened to it, I don't know, thousands of times, it just kind of gets a bit, you know, too much. So I think you need a break, and it's probably even a year or two down the track before you want to hear those songs again, because you've just listened to it too many times.
What about when you're cruising in your car and some Pete Murray Gold pops up on the wireless? Do you change the channel or do you stick around?
I turn it down or turn it off. Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah. If I've got my kids in the car, or, you know, someone I know, and I just turn it off. Yeah, I get a bit embarrassed. So, but I mean, it's hard when you're out. You know, that's the other thing, when you're out and, you know, in a shopping centre or something like that, or, you know, shopping Woolies or Coles, you know, sometimes it's you're in the aisles there and it's playing, so it's kind of like, you know, trying to hide.
What was the first, can you remember, I've asked a few musicians have been on this,
yep,
when you first heard one of your songs on the radio, can you remember that moment? Because I presume at that moment you're lapping it up.
You know what, it was a really strange time, because I was, I had an old combi, still got my old combi. I was living in Melbourne. I went down to Melbourne to make things work, and I basically had an independent album that I'd put out, and I'd sent it off to Triple J. It's funny how things work, hey? And I was in the car, and I remember just jokingly said, oh, come on, play some Pete Murray, you know. And next minute, Richard Kingsmill came on and said, hey, we've got a new artist coming out. I think this guy's got a bright future, blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly my song was playing. I'm going, whoa. Same thing happened, mate. I'm in my car on my own. I turned it down because I thought these guys will, you know, they'll know it's me. Like, no one knew who I was back then, but I was sort of so embarrassed I had to turn it down, because it's strange.
I've got, I often ask this on the show to people, Pete, if you could swap jobs with someone, whose job would you like? And my answer, if I was asked that question, oh, I love my job, I'm a sports commentator, it's the best gig going around, but my perfect job would be living on the coast of New South Wales, surfing, all of a sudden being able to play the guitar and sing, cruising from RSL to RSL, doing a gig, getting $500, a Palmer and a beer, getting more waves that day, jumping in my combi and heading further up the coast. Don't
I was about to say, you want my job, except for the RSL clubs. I
don't know. You're bigger than RSL clubs now, but don't shatter the illusion. Is that the Pete Murray life?
Yeah, you know, look, it is.
Is it?
And that's the life that I dreamt up years ago. You know, my dad, he died at 47, had a heart attack. I was 18 at the time.
Right.
And I remember just thinking from that moment, you know, he'd worked pretty hard. He was a watchmaker jeweller, and he worked really hard in his business to get it up and running. He'd sold it. And him and mum were about to travel around Australia. They bought a caravan, about to take off, and he worked for about 12 months for another guy that just bought the business from him. 2 weeks before they were about to take off, or a month, whatever it was, he had a heart attack, died. So, and that was a lesson for me. I just went, well, I don't want that to happen to me. I want to be able to enjoy my life. I want to do something that I love doing, that I can travel the world with, that I can live where I want to live. All these things I just said when I was, you know, around that age, this is what I want to do. I didn't know it was going to be music. Huh. Music came 10 years later.
Wow.
So it was a long time, you know. But that was the thing. I started to think about this and going, what do I want to do? And that's it. So for me to be here, Byron Bay, this is a beautiful part of the world. Been here since 2005. I can surf whenever I want to get a lot of time off to spend time with family. And that's the other thing too. Like, you know, I want to make sure that I spend time with my kids. You know, Dad was working a lot. And I only just felt like I had my 18th birthday 2 months before he died. I felt like that stage I really got to know him. I guess it was a bit old school then. Like you didn't sort of hang out with your parents too much. And Dad was, you know, like I guess that's what he was like. So for me, it's important for me to have a life with my kids, and I've done that. And I feel great that I've been able to have the time at home to spend time with the kids and to enjoy that, you know. And that's been lifestyle choice. To be, you know, just happy to be able to, not to be the greatest musician or the richest musician in the world, just to be well enough that you can have a career and you can travel the world and you can have time with your kids and your family, and that's the biggest thing that makes you happy or makes me happy.
And surf and have a palm and a pot, like it sounds ideal to me.
That's right.
Hey, let's swap. Can we swap commie van stories?
Yes. Yep.
So I was, this is about you, but anyone that owns a combi, it's always great to hear the story. I was coming up through Mexico with a mate, and we'd been surfing up through Central America, and we crossed the border into Arizona. And I'll never forget the guys, because we had surfboards in a backpack. He's like, yep. Hey, man, there ain't no waves here, man. It was like, no, okay, but we're heading to the coast. So we go to Tucson, Arizona, and we bought a 1967 combi van that we drove all the way up the West Coast, across the Canadian Rockies, eventually sold it.
Was it decked out to sleep in?
It was decked out to sleep in. It was pretty rough.
Yep.
It was like that 6 months. Like I picture that car. We worked as painters in Canada for a while, so we gave it a spray job from white to red. Like I love. I'm not a car man. I've worked in motorsport, but I'm not a car man. But if I could have that combi back, I sold it to this bloke who got in the back seat when we sold it to him, Pete, and I'd lived a pretty sheltered life. And he's like, right, let's smoke a bone. And I'm like, what's a bone? He's like, it's a joint, man. It's a joint. So I said,
combi talk, combi talk. You didn't have the lingo going, did you?
No, I know. So I said, now you have the joint. But that's how he celebrated the purchase. So it's such a beautiful thing, the combi. Tell me about your combi van.
Yeah, well, look, I upgraded from a Valiant Ute to the combi.
So now, I had a Valiant Ute is a classic vehicle in the first place.
It was my grandfather's. It got handed down to me. So I had this... you know, great old car key. My friend's dad used to call it the car key ghost. It was just this beast of a car. And anyway, I started doing some covers gigs early on, and I would put all, you know, my guitars and all my gear in the back. But I always sort of had to, you know, run in, drop the stuff off, and then run back out and grab the other stuff and bring it back in. So it wasn't secure. And if it rained, we'd kind of have a chance of getting wet. So I thought, I've got to buy a car that's got great security, you know, that I can maybe even sleep in, and you know, what's this car that I need that's, you know, that will get me around from A to B. And I don't know, someone mentioned the combi, I think, and I was like, wow, it's a great car. You know, and I remember thinking, wow, I'm buying this car, so upgrading from Valiant Ute to a combi. I don't know if it was upgrade or downgrade at the time, but so I got this, and then I could lock the car up. If I'd had a couple of drinks after the gig, I could sleep in the thing. It was just like, it was perfect.
It's unbelievable. A perfect vehicle.
And like, I've still got the thing. I bought this back in 1996.
Wow.
And I bought it off an old guy who was a big lover of it as well. Him and his wife travelled around Australia twice in it. There was one previous owner before him, and he, when I bought it off him that day, he basically, his wife had died 6 months earlier. And he said, you know what, take the car and leave before you see me cry. And I was like, wow, this is like,
I get it.
Really amazing feeling for this guy. I didn't sort of think too much about it, but the combi, it is. It's like part of your life. I can't sell this thing, you know, because I've done so much in it, traveled so in so many places, and you know, it's the kids have grown up in it. The kids love traveling in it too. So you know, it's one of those things that if I sold it, I don't think I'd get another one back. And it's in good condition, you know, so pretty good condition. So I just can't do that at the moment. Yeah.
I remember, Pete, we were in Arizona and we just bought it for $800 and we got our insurance. We had to do the license, got our license in Arizona, and the heater was jammed on, and it's summer in Tempe, you know, it's 40 degrees, and the heaters, and my mate Timmy, who I was travelling with, he said, I'll fix this. He's a mechanical type of things, and he looked in the book and found where the heater box was underneath the car, and he took a hammer to it, and he banged the shit out of that heater box till it fell off, And then the heater didn't work anymore. Well done.
There you go.
Nailed it. But 4 months later,
yeah,
we're going over the Rockies.
Cold.
It's minus 6 degrees and we can't operate the heater. So we're having to drive the thing in our sleeping bags because he'd knocked the heater off.
I drove from Melbourne to Adelaide one time for a show with my band. We had a trailer. Normally, I think it's a six-hour drive, I think, from Melbourne to Adelaide. This was like 13 hours to get across. We were both, any hill we had, it was just like slowing down to like 50, you know, trying to get up this hill. Yeah, and freezing cold. Like, we all just had, like, basically beanies. We're rubbed up, and it was just, it's so cold. And a friend of mine actually said, I'll hook up the heater. He hooked up the heater up, and it was just, it was unbelievable how warm this thing was, how much, you know, warmth you get from the engine. So, yeah, it was great. But it died as well, you know, something happened to the heater. It's not working anymore. But, yeah, they're great cars, you know. I love it to death, and it's just, I don't know, it's part of my life, you know.
More of Pete in a moment. Next up on the Howie Games Artist Series. I reckon you're going to like this episode. A man most known as H.G. Nelson, whose real name is Greg Pickhaver. Now, Greg, alongside John Doyle, who plays the part of rampaging Roy Slaven, have entertained us for near on 40 years with their satirical blend of sports commentary, TV, radio, podcasts, and some really sharp work at the Olympics.
Here he comes now into the corner and ready to start. Yang Wei from China. And China, God, what a place. Incredible gymnastic talent, so deep. I think he began gymnastics in the womb, Roy, this boy.
I think so.
He's just feeling the mat here.
Feeling the mat.
He is. Look at that. Oh, fantastic. Oh, bang the bat.
The set straight into that.
And also little Hello Boys there. The Hello Boys on the top of the party date.
Yeah.
And very good work.
Flat bag.
Hands in
perfectly
the air.
Perfectly controlled. Will he go into a Hello Boys out of that? Yes, he is. And closes the door and it's me.
Now that's Greg Pickhaver and H.G. Nelson on the Artist Series next Tuesday. Let's get back to Pete. Sport for you, mate.
Yep.
Reading a little bit about you. There's not a great deal about you online, to be honest, which makes it interesting for me. Athletics and rugby at a pretty serious level. Tell me about your rugby.
Yeah, well, look, basically my three sports are swimming, athletics and footy, you know. So
right.
I grew up in a small country town called Chinchilla. Naturally, all we had was swimming and athletics and footy. So rugby league out there in Chinchilla.
Yeah.
And I loved it. It was great, you know. So when I went to boarding school in Brisbane at Nudgee College for grade 11, 12.
Famous,
that's when I
famous
got into,
footy school,
yeah,
huh?
Famous rugby school, yeah. Went there and got into rugby. Loved that as well. You know, both games, I really love them. I played like first 15 for Nudgee for 2 years and Queensland Schoolboys. And So I went back to athletics because athletics was kind of just a passion I had for a long time. I really wanted to compete at either the Commonwealth Games or the Olympics. And I was running.
What distance?
800.
800. Yeah. Could you choose a harder event?
Well, I used to be a sprinter when I was younger, and then I had some Achilles problems, so I kind of lost my speed. I was like 100 metres runner, and then just I think I'd lost the speed, couldn't keep up with those guys anymore, and then I went to the 800s, and I just had the speed. I was just hanging with them, and then just had the speed at the end. I'd run past, and, you know, so, you know, the athletics was good. So I did athletics. I'll come back to athletics again in a sec. But
yeah.
I went, did athletics for a little while, and came back into rugby, super fit, you know, with the 800s, eights and fours I would do. So I was super fit. And then I started playing sevens. And I loved sevens because it was such a free game. You know, you'd just be going the whole time. And for me, having the fitness where a lot of the other rugby guys didn't have it at that level, I kind of really stood out in the sevens because I just, you know, when everyone got tired, I'd just keep going. So, and even when my team got tired, they'd just kick it, and I'd just be the only one that would run through and pick it up and score the try, pretty much. So, there was a chance there in a year after the athletics that I was doing the rugby, and the chance of getting in the Australian sevens team to go to Hong Kong. And it's a bit of a funny story. I was living with my sister at the time, and I'd made the the Queensland side to go and play in this other trial, which they were going to select the Australian side from. There's a fair bit of hype around me on a couple of the selectors. Mark Eller was one, Jeff Miller was another one, ex Wallabies.
Yeah.
And Bob Dwyer was also a selector for that. And so Jeff Miller came up after the first trial that I got picked in this Queensland side to go and trial that for. And he said, look, and I hurt my knee, the posterior cruciate, which was difficult, but you can still play. You know, like I probably could have. So I said to Jeff, look, I've injured my knee. I'm having physio. So, look, if Bob's really serious and he wants me to trial out and there's a chance of making the Australian side, then I'll go to the trials. Otherwise, if I don't hear from him, I won't go. I'll just rest up and I'll come back at the end of the year and I'll go again for next year. And, well, this is kind of like 6 weeks, I think. But like I said, I probably could play with a bit of a painkiller and get it done. Anyway, I didn't hear from him. So I thought I just pulled out of the team and didn't go. And about a week after I pulled out, my sister, who I lived with, said, someone called for you the other day.
Oh,
about
no.
About a week ago.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, who was that? She said, oh, some guy, Bob Dwyer.
Oh, come
and I'm like,
on.
Please tell me you're joking. You're joking, aren't you? And she said, no, yeah, Bob Dwyer. She sort of wanted to know. He asked how your knee was. She's like, had no idea. I was like, what did you say? So, anyway, I didn't get the information. I kind of pulled out. The whole thing was over and I missed the opportunity. And that was it. By the end of the year, I came back to play again. I was kind of, you know, fired up and I did my anterior cruciate in the same knee. So it was kind of all over. But that's my kind of claim to fame in the rugby world. And
what's your sister's name?
Nicole, but I call her Coley.
Coley's dropped the ball in a major way.
She knows it too. And I haven't ever let her.
I bet you, I
should hope so. So I actually went over years later and I think it was the World Cup in 2003 in France. And the Wallaby team got me to come over there and play some songs for them. So, and I met Bob. I hadn't met Bob before. And I was going, yeah, look, a long time ago, I was telling him a story. He said, I remember that story. Yeah. And you didn't call.
Like, oh,
mate, hang on a second. he was a bit dirty on me. So, yeah, I've got all these raps on you, mate, and you didn't even call. It's like, so I wiped you. It's like, oh, so embarrassing.
So rugby, athletics, before you get to music, which I didn't realise that you took music up a little bit later, which we'll get to, but what was the grand plan? You're 18 or 19. What's the career sort of planning for Pete Murray at this stage?
You know, when I first left school, Dad died and it just threw me. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I started doing a hotel management course for a while because another mate of mine was doing it and he said, I'm going to do this. And I was like, I really just didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I thought, I'll do that. I did that for 6 months and I didn't like it. Then I got into natural medicine where I loved that. You know, it's kind of like I could use this for my sport. So I started to think, look, this is where I want to go. This is my career. I was working with a couple of physios, doing some work with them. I was working in a gym. So I thought this is great. You know, when I'm kind of finished my career in sport, whatever that's going to be, then this is what I want to, work with sportsmen and women and try and go to, you know, the Commonwealth Games, the Olympics in these teams and work with these guys. And that's what I wanted to do. Then I had another experience with another mate who came into my room out of the blue one day. And this is while I was still studying natural medicine. And he said, you know what, mate, I'm going to go get a guitar lesson. I've always wanted to do it. And I've never done it, so I'm going to go and do it. And I just thought, I've never thought about music in my life. But that sounds pretty cool. I said, maybe I might do the same. So as it turns out, I borrowed a guitar off a mate's brother. And my friend, his name's Charlie. So he never did. He never took lessons, but he was the reason that I went and had a couple of lessons. He's the reason I got started. So as soon as I picked up his guitar, I'm going, wow, like this is amazing. So much fun, this thing, you know. Like, and so I was just really passionate about this music. And it took me a long time to kind of get the hang of it, but it was fun, you know. So as it turns out, I just kind of basically played in my room to no one for about 2 years until I got to the stage where I could actually play some songs. And Charlie and I were massive fans of Neil Young. So Charlie hadn't seen me for 2 years. He was studying teaching at the time. He went off and became a teacher. And then we hooked up again and he was at the Gold Coast. I was in Brisbane. He said, he came to town. I said, mate, come over. Let's catch up. I've got something to show you. So I came over and we had a couple of beers and I just got this guitar out. And he's like, what are you doing? I said, mate, this is because of you. I started doing this. So I played like a couple of Neil Young songs and we were just singing along for the afternoon. He was like, wow, I can't believe what you've done, you know. I said, mate.
So that's the first time you played in front of anybody?
Yep. And,
wow.
And because he was the guy that got me started, right? You know, so
yeah,
I said,
yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah.
because of you, this is where I'm at, you know, and I'm loving it. You know, this is fantastic. And then 6 months later, he had an aneurysm and passed away. And it was like this, you know, it was a obviously a devastating time for me.
Yes.
And I named my first son Charlie after him. And he's the reason that I got started. You know, I kind of believe in fate, and I believe I was kind of meant to meet him. And he was kind of help, kind of getting me on the path to where I was supposed to be. That's what I believe. So, you know, sad times, but I've still got great memories of that guy, and you know, and what he did for me.
So, Pete, you're talking 2 years. You'll see that beautiful guitar behind me.
Yep.
2 years ago, pretty much 2 years ago, I was like, I know nothing about music. Mm-hmm. I've no interest in music. I was consumed with work. What can I do to take my mind off work, learn something new? It's like, oh, I don't have a go at the guitar. And I have a love, 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 hate relationship with that thing. 2 years in, I love it. I love how much of my mind it takes. I hate how bad I am at it. I'm not naturally gifted at all as a musician.
Yeah.
Were you a Ricky Ponting that once you started playing, you were flying, or were you a man, a Justin Langer, that had to work and work and work?
Early on, I was a Justin Langer. I think it doesn't come easy, music, and trying to get your fingers, you know, especially what was I, 20, 21, 22, I think by the time I picked up guitar. So it's, you know, most guys that are playing are in their teens, you know, they're young and they're getting stuck into it. So for me, it was a really odd thing to do, you know, and to try and get your fingers into these shapes of chords and, you know, so, but look, once I got into it, what I found was natural was my voice.
Right, so you could sing.
Well, but I didn't know that.
Huh.
But that's what I felt. That just started to really kick into gear, and I had no idea I had that. And once I started playing for people, everyone's going, "Mate, your voice is really great," you know. And so, but I mean, early days, like, you know, learning the guitar, I remember being super excited. I think I was playing like Heart of Gold, Neil Young, and I knew what the song was. And I had another friend of mine said, "Mate, check this out. See if you can guess what the song is." And I'm playing it, and he's like, "Can you play it again?" Yeah, sure. And I'm like, in my mind, going, "This guy, he's got to get this. This is good." You know, play it again. He's like, play it again. It's this, Neil Young, Heart of Gold, you know.
This happens with me and my wife.
Yep.
Every 2 weeks I'm like, "Babe, what's this one?" She's like, "I got no idea what that is."
Yep.
And then I tell her, she said, "That doesn't sound anything like that." So what was your first paid gig, and how long into the process was it? Like you say, it's pretty late in life to take something up like that.
Yeah, I was 26.
So 4 years later.
Yep, wow. 26, and I had the same mate that couldn't understand that song, Dave Weber.
Come on, Dave.
He was very helpful too. He said, "No, I came past this place. There's a little bar in Brisbane called Dooley's Hotel, and they've got this little, like a little sports bar. It only fits like maybe 100 people in there. It's an Irish bar. Cool little bar." He said, "It'd be perfect for what you're doing. You should go and try and earn some money. Like, I think you're getting good enough." I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I'm quite that level yet." And he's like, "Well, just you know, go and just check it out and just see what you can do." So I thought I'll just pop in there one day. So I went in there with the guitar. Most guys have, like, you know, I think back then there was like, you know, take a CD in and a bit of a resume thing. I've played here, and I had no idea. I just rocked up and said, "Who's the owner?" And so Jan Dooley was – Jan and Tom Dooley owned it. Jan sadly's passed away now, but she was great. "Can I play a few songs for you? And just – If you like me, I'm just wondering if I can get a gig." And she was great. She said, "Yeah, I'm about to have lunch. So why don't you sit up there, play a few songs, and I'll have a listen, and then I'll kind of let you know if you got the gig." So I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So I'm sitting down. I played about three songs. At the end of the third song, she came up and said, "You're great. I love you. Fantastic. Can you do..." And this was on Monday. She said, "Can you start Friday?" And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, "Yeah, sure." Try to be confident. You know, "Yeah, sure, I can do that." You know, and she said, "All right, see you Friday. You're gonna do like four 45-minute sets." I'm thinking, "Holy shit,
that's a lot of songs.
It's a lot of songs. I'm gonna have to repeat, do some different versions of certain, you know, songs." So I was panicking all week, and I was trying to learn as many songs as I could. Had to go and get a PA from somewhere, and I was so nervous. Man, driving in Friday night for this gig, I was excited, but I was just petrified. And I got halfway there, and I just stopped the car. The Valiant, the car key ghost, stopped it. And I just said, "I can't do it." And I turned around and started driving home. I was that nervous. And I went, "Hang on, stop." Pulled over again. I said, "You've got to do this. You've just got to get this out of the way." So I went in, did the gig. And most people at that bar are there to drink and chat.
Yep.
You know, so they're not sort of focusing too much. on what you're doing. But, you know, still to get through that four sets of 45 minutes was the most terrifying moment for me, you know, I think in my musical career, because it was, even though I'm playing covers, it was just terrifying that if I made one mistake or you forgot anything, it was just that fear of the people would pick it up. And so for the first 3 months, I was petrified every Friday night. And then after that, I started to get relaxed and became, you know, okay with it. The next time I experienced that fear again was when I played my own show doing my own songs. That was a different level again, because at the venue I played at then, the people that were there, there's about maybe 30 people, but they were focused. They were there listening to original music, and they were focused, and it was dead quiet, and that was terrifying, because that is your own stuff, and that's when you're putting it, you're pouring your heart out to your music, and that's where you, you know, someone can shoot you down, and you're going to take it really hard. Where in a covers gig, it's like, you know, I don't really like that song. That's not my song, so I don't care, you know.
That's the end of Pete Murray Part A. See you on the other side.
Listener.